502-518-1213. WPFW, where we are changing the world one broadcast and one community event at a time.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
This is a journey.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the collision. This is the part where I say he's a Tom Thomas, 11-year NBA veteran. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW. We do not have a Ton with us today, although we miss him greatly. Who we do have is Mr. Chuck Modiano. How you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, DZ?
I'm doing great, and we're going to be joined soon by Coach Kevin McNutt, who currently is attempting to figure out the technology of how to join us online. Now, I'm hoping Coach is able to... Oh, there he is.
Yes, there he is.
I was just saying that you were just about to attach the string to the end of the Dixie cup to be able to yell in your comments to Chuck and me over here. So... glad you have the string attached, Chuck. I'm sorry, Coach. And Coach, if you have to send any smoke signals or anything like that, just know we're here for you.
Hey, Street Beat, you see what I'm saying, Street Beat? We had a great show last week, because, you know, Dave was on a very critical assignment, and then he started already. You see what I'm saying, Street Beat?
He did start already.
Right.
Well, but you know, you're going to bring, you know what, I'm horrible. I want to inflame this beef. I want to inflame this trash talk. And there's something that I can't because he was visiting Mumia, which messed up all of our trash talk. He was visiting Mumia, which I think was as good as an excuse to miss a show as ever.
The best.
Major shout out to Mumia Abu-Jamal. We're going to get him free. But we are going to not speak about that this week, although I'm always happy to answer questions about Mumia, his case, and being able to speak with him. We've got a really incredible show this week. Of course, we at WPFW are, I know people are listening to us all over the country right now because we are at, you know, really ground zero of what is a federal occupation of our city here in Washington, D.C. And we know that this is something that the Trump administration has eyes on doing in other cities. They're very open about this. And so what we want to do on our show, in addition to many other things we have lined up for y'all this week, is we want to really highlight the resistance to this federal occupation, because we see it in the streets. We feel what's going on. we see these neo-Confederate National Guards people from South Carolina, you know, fulfilling the fantasies of Jefferson Davis and marching in Washington, D.C. We see the people heckling them, asking them questions like, why are you here? You know, these are the kinds of questions that we want to be able to give voice to here on WPFW. No question about that. And just to say that later on the show at 10:30, we're going to speaking to, why don't you tell us, Chuck, who we're going to be speaking to at 10:30 about a rally tonight taking place at 14th and U Street. This person is speaking at that rally, 14th and U today, 6 p.m. They have a bunch of really remarkable speakers who are going to be out there. Which of these speakers is going to be with us, Chuck?
Oh, I'm so excited, and this should happen a while ago. If I say Yadi, a lot of people know who that is, or Yadi, and that is just the founder of Long Live Go-Go. And if you've been in D.C. and you've seen that truck out there, and not just the truck when everybody is enjoying themselves and dancing to Go-Go, but that truck is out there when there's a George Floyd uprising. That truck is out there when there is a federal takeover. You'll see that truck out there mixing in, utilizing popular culture to reach people in D.C. where you could have fun and you could be serious at the same time about serious things. They are not mutually exclusive. And it's something that we do here at Edges, at the Collision. I almost said that. At the Collision right here on WPFW. So I see what Yadiya is doing very much in the same vein of what we do here.
Yadiya is certainly not alone, speaking today at 6 p.m. Over at 14th and U Street, which is, promises to be a pretty big speak out. Ooh, we're looking at that everybody should support. Just some names: Mark Choppa, Marcus Batchelor, Yadiya, as you mentioned, Trackstar Kelly, Tony Lewis Jr., Robert Wright Jr., Leslie Redman, my good friend Kamone Freeman, Kelsey Adams, TV Hobson Powell, Joanna Hardy, Watch Me Work, Marawi Jarima, and Big Psych, giving props to everybody who's going to be out there today, 6 p.m., 14th and U, and we are going to speak to Yadiya in just a little bit. But first, we also have some big news here on the D.C. Sports Tip that frankly is connected to politics, and I'm going to throw it to you, Coach, on this. This week, with very, very, very little fanfare, the 11-year career of John Wall came to an end. Few people noticed. Frankly, it felt like few people cared. But for those of us here in D.C., John Wall, maybe it was only for a couple of short years, but he meant something to this city from a professional men's basketball perspective in terms of the energy and attention that he brought to the professional team, the Washington Wizards, that frankly, truly had not been seen in quite some time and seemed to galvanize the city. Meanwhile, John Wall as a personality seemed to galvanize the city. And maybe it didn't last long, and maybe for other teams and other cities, they'll be laughing like, oh, that's your great moment, 3 years with an all-star point guard. But it was more than that for me. It was deeper than that. Maybe I'm just overstating what was a shooting star across the sky to mean something more than it was. But I throw to you, Coach, when I say John Wall, Washington Wizards, what comes to mind? And am I overblowing what clearly the rest of the sports world did not see as a very big story?
I jotted down shooting star before you said it. And that's where I saw John Wall. Frankly, I didn't know he was still in the league or he hadn't played. When he said he retirement, I said, oh, I thought he had already did.
Yeah.
But Wall, as a personality, he had a story to tell, you know, his upbringing and how he got to Kentucky and all of that good stuff. He was what? He was the number one draft choice, but he wasn't the number one overall draft choice, correct?
Mm-hmm. 101. That's right. Yep.
Okay. Yep. So I have a special affinity to that because that's, you know, that's a point guard. Back in the day when I played, I was a point guard. So I, you know, So, leave it alone. Leave it alone, Zion. We already got a beep to talk if we get a chance. So anyway, but and his athletic talent was just exceptional. I mean, he's one of the fastest guys on the floor. We talked last week. We talked about refereeing, and the two of the fastest guys I ever refereed were Ty Lawson, a DC guy, McNamara, University of North Carolina, played a lot with the Denver Nuggets, and Allen Iverson. I had opportunity and fortune to ref both. John Wall would be in that category, but he was a lot bigger than those guys. Wall, 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah, big dude.
And could go coast to coast in an eye blink. So I remember his talent and all that he brought to the table. And I loved him as a personality and things he overcome to get to the level that he did. But basically, I think yours, you have a higher, you know, a higher esteem for him as it relates to his time here in D.C. Because I think of him, and I have a hard time separating him from Arenas.
Interesting. Okay.
I need you to go.
I'll start there. Let Street Beat jump in.
No, I need you to.
Before you go, Chuck, before you go, just on the number one pick point, because I find this fascinating. Take away Allen Iverson, because I always considered him more of a two than a point guard. Let's be real. And so you have John Wall, number one overall pick in 2010. Derrick Rose, number one overall pick in 2008. Before those two guys, who frankly in some respects had similar careers, you don't have a point guard going number one overall.
Yes, you do.
Let me talk, man.
Okay.
You don't have a point guard number one going overall. You have to go all the way back to Magic Johnson.
Yep.
You know, in 1979, and before Magic, if you want to say, well, Magic's a freak at 6'9", whatever, you have to John Lucas.
There you go. That's what I was waiting to hear.
1976 is the last, with all due respect to Magic Johnson, the last true point guard.
Yes.
To be drafted number one overall before the little Rose Wall flurry.
Right.
You have to go back to 76.
Yes.
Which just to me says something about how special Wall was. To you right there, Mr. Chuck, what were you about to say? I'm sorry.
I'm in the camp of overrating. Others would think I'm overrating John Wall. Coach would think I'm overrating John Wall. And I believe John Wall is the greatest circumstance of bad luck. And that had he been in another situation than the Washington Wizards, he would be a surefire Hall of Famer. I absolutely believe that because I watched him. I went to a lot of games very early on. And the first thing, which coach already broke down, that I was just shocked at was his first step. I mean, he walked in day one with this first step. He could blow by anybody. He could blow by anyone in the league. And I said, wow. And then I saw something else. I said, this person's inclination is to pass first. And that is his natural inclination. You see, he wants to set up teammates. People draw to him. He finds the person. He had 3 years of over 10 assists, but without necessarily that type of support. It would be larger if he had better support. But what killed me is his first 3 years. It's the worst thing that could ever happen to a great player is that you're the best player on the team on day one. And he walked in and was the best player on the team. So let's say he's Magic Johnson. Let's just say he's Magic Johnson. He walked in, I got Kareem over here. Then later next year, I have Worthy over here. I have all these scores over here. He could have been his true self. And I believe his natural inclination was really more Magic Johnson. But what happens when if Magic came on the Lakers and he was the best scorer and he was forced to score? He was that he had no choice because he was the best scorer. And I feel two things have failed this man. One is the Washington Wizards drafting you. That's the first thing. If it was another team, I think we're having an entire discussion. And then we have to talk about the injury, the knee injury. He was never the same after the injury. But before that, he's taking championship Celtics to 7 and things like that. I mean, and finally he gets Bradley Beal and still not much of a front court. It's a shame what the sport did to him. And the classic case of a player being punished for having poor teammates. That's how I feel about it.
I'm going to throw in there one thing that I have no problems with what you're saying there, Street Beat. But I guess the thing was, he was he had one flaw. He's a pass first cat. His shot was never consistent. And he got to the hole, and I think he relied too much on athleticism because he was a superb athlete. And he never perfected his shot. I don't know the numbers on his three point.
I can tell you if you like.
It wasn't
lifetime at 32% from three.
Really, it's better than I thought.
It got better. He worked on it, so it got better.
That's not what his game though, right?
Right. But that
I have 37% in an injury shortened year. If you're talking about a full, let's say, call it minimum 65 game season, his high was 35.
Well, and what was his highest average, Dave?
Points per game?
Yeah.
23.1.
Did he ever break double figure assists, as Chuck was saying about him?
Many times. That was his real game. You know, for somebody who played, you know, minimally for, you know, the Clippers and the Rockets for a couple of seasons at the end of his career, you know, even with that diminished statistical outlay, he still averaged 9 a game for his career.
Wow, that's a good number.
If we went around and whatnot, he was a 19-9 guy
for
his career.
Yeah.
Pretty darn good.
Yeah, yeah. Man. Look, for your career is pressing 20 points a game, but he's pressing double double. In the 19 and 9 is you probably round up to 20 and 10. That's Hall of Fame numbers for some. But like you said,
yeah, just
like
not enough games. Though,
you know, short career, injury riddle, and on losing programs. But so was Pete Maravich, though. So
you know,
yeah.
Can I just tell you? It's wild to me for John Wall, though. The other side of this that I don't want to lose as we discuss this is, and this is where I think, frankly, he differs from Gilbert. Gilbert really captured the imagination of people here because of personality. You know, Agent Zero and these point games and the streak shooting and whatnot. John Wall, it felt different. It felt like he captured something that you know very well, Coach, and that's how deep basketball runs in the marrow of this area.
Mm-hmm.
From the high school perspective, to the AAU perspective, to the college perspective. This whole DMV area, we know, is richer than any area in the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's a whole documentary made about us.
Right.
And yet, it's Something in the Water, great documentary, and yet... the pro team has never even come close to matching the hoop intensity in this town. And I've said since the day I moved here, which was, believe me, when John Wall was still in his swaddling clothes, since I moved here, that the right pro team could galvanize this city in a way that you see great NBA cities, like among the best NBA cities in the country. Name them. Oklahoma City. Name the best cities. San Antonio. Big market, small market, Lakers, Knicks. I don't care. The Wizards could rival that if they had a team that could capture the imagination of an already hoops mad city. The Wizards have never been able to do that since I've moved here. They haven't won 50 games since I've moved here. They haven't gotten past the second round of the playoffs since I've moved here. And the closest we have come to sniffing that was what Chuck mentioned before, and that was John Wall taking the Celtics to 7 games in the second round. And I know that's such a small thing to hang a banner on. Like, hey, let's hang a banner that says we push the Celtics to 7 games in a second round playoff series. It's frankly kind of sad. But what I remember is that it was the first time I felt like the wires came together to create a full electrical current between the grassroots hoop scene in D.C. and the pro team. Coach, your thoughts on that?
Wow, that
was nice, right? These deals make it hard for you to talk trash when you start being poetic.
How I feel. That's how I feel, Coach. But as long as I've been here, Coach, your roots run much deeper than mine. So I'm just curious as your thoughts to that.
Wow. I never thought about connecting dots. That was a mouthful, Dave. I'm not, I can see that. Well, and let me just go back this way. Is that the way you saw it? That's the way, you know.
In real time, when I was going to these games, mm-hmm. and I was going like Chuck, I was going to a lot. Like, I was completely like, this is different from arenas. This is even very different. I think this is how I would rank it. Wall 1, Arenas Era 2, Jordan 3.
No.
And then the blip of Weber 4 in terms of electricity and excitement. Oh, by the way, can I just say something real quick?
Go.
No NBA player in history has ended their career averaging 20 points and 10 assists per game.
Okay.
No one's ever done it. Not Oscar, not Russ, nobody.
Okay, I know Tony Archibald did it for a season, led the league in scoring and assists, but I guess he didn't do it for his career.
Yeah, we're talking career here, and here's Wall with 19-9.
Right. I got you. The feedback to your statement, though, I compared the two because Arenas was a shooting star. He wasn't here, and then his stuff was self-inflicted, obviously, with the gun pointing and all that nonsense. And I'm also going to say, I'm gonna go back here. Arenas, when he was in town, man, he was going down to Berry Farms in the summer league and playing and thrilling the city. So I hear you saying that, but that's why
I'm not denigrating at all. What Arenas did with that stuff was terrific. I'm just saying Wall, it was, you know, even that amped up to 11 in terms of like the connection to the city. Right, that's all I'm saying.
Right. And Wall came to town with that cachet out of Kentucky. I don't know if he won a title, right?
No.
I know he had a deep run in Kentucky.
Darn close.
Yeah, right.
Him and Cousins.
Right, okay. And you're right, Cousins. But they played in the summer league and all that stuff. Gilbert, you know, he was like a second-round pick out of Arizona, something like that. So he had to work his way up. And then he was kind of like, wow, look at Gilbert. Okay, have you been checking out the Wizards, what Gilbert's doing? And then to see him launching from 35 and knocking their shots and then, you know, that kind of thing. So that's the only reason. They both have seen shooting stars. Short time here. Should have been longer. Had overcome the obstacles of being just on a downtrodden program, like Street Beat said. But impact with the city, Arenas had a strong influence, man. I mean, going down to Berry Farm and playing in the summer, that is 90 degrees. It's a packed, it's uneven concrete. You're putting your career at stake going down there and playing. And he loved it.
Yeah, well put, Chuck. Your thoughts, man.
Put a couple numbers on it. I felt what you felt, DZ. I remember that Boston series. They had previously won a series. Okay, they won the series before that, and that was a
before the Celtics.
Before the Celtics, they had beat Atlanta. And let me just give a memory, give you some substance to why you were feeling that in the clinching game six. He went for 42 points and 8 assists. Put the team on his back at 15 for 21. This is what he did. I remember this because now he finally has Bradley Beal, and he has something to work with. And in that first round, I'm going to tell you, DZ, he went for 32, then number 32 again, then 29, then 22, then 20, and clinched with 42. And he had games of assists of 14, 10, 14. He was doing it. You are not reinventing history. Don't let anyone tell you. I felt it at that time. I'm looking up the numbers now because I don't have that level of memory.
Chuck, that's Atlanta series you talk about, or the Celtics series?
That was Atlanta, but let me just say this.
Go ahead, buddy.
He takes the Celtics to 7.
Right.
Let me talk about the first two games they lost. In the game one they lost, he went for 20 points and 16 assists.
Mm.
Okay? And then on the second game they lost in overtime, he went for 40 points and 13 assists. This is the
it was incredible.
John Wall is working with. When the other stars go 40 points and 13 assists, their teams win. And I'm going to say one last thing that I regret.
Come on, buddy.
I'm a stat. I'm going to regret. Someone listening is going to be mad at me. Because I've been in a gazillion sports arguments, and there's some players who are so beloved that they almost have a cult. And Kobe is such a beloved player. And I would even argue the most skilled player, and we could have that discussion on another time with Coach. I mean, just pure skill in what he did. And I would argue even could have been the best player of all time.
Please get off of Kobe.
I'm going to get off.
No Kobe tangents.
One thing. But he took two bad shots every game. He took about two bad shots every game, which lowered his percent. My point is this. Kobe Bryant, who's thought to be an assassin in the finals, has a very low shooting percent, like 39%. He was way lower in the finals. Nobody knows this. In over seven finals, the assassin did not play well. And my point is, we have these narratives in our head that when he was down, when he didn't play well, the Shaq picked him up, other players picked him up. And this is what winning is about. Every star, including Michael Jordan, had bad games, and their teammates picked them up. John Wall needed people to pick him up, and if he had people to pick him up, we'd be talking about a Hall of Famer right now.
Mm-hmm. That's what of course, the injuries makes that a little
tough. And then the injury.
Even a better team, a better situation. I mean, we know that John played with so much athleticism, so much torque in his game, so much speed. It's just you wonder sometimes, like, all right, because obviously sometimes injuries are just bad luck. And, you know, and you wouldn't have been in Prince George's County if you played for the Lakers. So maybe you wouldn't have tripped on that curb. You know, it's like you don't know. But the luck thing is real. How about this for a luck thing? John Wall, amazing rookie year, 16 points, 8 assists. You know why he didn't win Rookie of the Year?
No.
Because Blake Griffin had been injured the entire previous year.
Right.
And classified as a rookie. By the way, a rule I despise, because you get to spend a year traveling with your team, getting used to the pros, you know, going to every practice and whatnot. And then, you get to be a quote unquote rookie. Right. And that just bothers me. But that's just more of the bad luck thing that I'm talking about.
Right.
But the other part of Wall, and I just really want to pound this home before we go, is I think the lasting memory of Wall to me is 2020, after the police murder of George Floyd, him leading a march alongside Bradley Beal that met up over at Capital One Arena. And there are a lot of great photos of Wall with the bullhorn leading chants, looking very happy and doing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that John Wall was like Ali 2.0 or something like that. I'm not being silly like that. But I do want to say that, like, John Wall is a reminder for us right now, as we see these neo-Confederate red state militias walking in our streets. Like, John Wall is a reminder of how important it is to have people who actually do represent the people, who are willing to speak up when the times call for it.
Well said. I went to John Wall. I think you're going to get some feedback, Dave, and some negative emails and so forth, because the beef about guards, in particular point guards, deals with your city and your upbringing, because they battle every day. I can have that conversation and go up down the block and the battle about New York guards, because that's the legend of New York. It's not so much Connie Hawkins, all of that. It's the legendary point guards. Kenny Anderson and Rod Strickland, that mob that came out of
Mark
there.
Mark Jackson.
So you're going to have some debate there.
Carl Washington. On that.
And other thing, which I go back a lot further, you guys, obviously, because of my age, is that I go back to the winning of the Wizards and Phil Chenier and Monroe. So that's why I didn't want to seem trying to burst your bubble, but I go back a lot longer than Wall, and I remember the championship years, and they didn't have any particular special guards, Kevin Porter and Greavy and people like that, but I remember Monroe and all of that. So but to bring Wall up in context with all of that I just talked about, the history and the championship, that just shows how much of an impact, which is why you started this conversation, that he had with us here in D.C.
Amen to that. Hey, do you know Ben Simmons was Rookie of the Year? I totally forgot about that. He scored 16 points and had 8 assists a game. I think if you left that man alone in a gym right now, he couldn't score 16 points. It's. I'm sorry. I just had to mention that. Looking at this, we got to go to break right now. We're coming back with the great Fatty Agati. I cannot wait to talk to this man. It's going to be unbelievable. But before we do, got to give a quick shout out to some history that was made last night. Before we go to Yadia, we people may have slept on this. I certainly did till Chuck texted me this morning. Paige Becker.
Yes.
44.
Yes.
Something that nobody has done in WNBA history, which is drop 40 points on 80% shooting. 44 points, 17 for 21 from the floor. Chuck, as soon as you got me, I watched the extended 15-minute highlight package from the game. First of all, fine. I appreciate you, Internet. I hate you all the time, but I appreciate you right now. And my goodness, I haven't seen Paige look that smooth since her high school tape, honestly. I mean, it was like high school Paige. I always felt like UConn with all the injuries and all the coach stuff with Gino, I always felt like it was a bit too much of a slog for Paige than it should have been, given her high school skill set. Do you agree with me about that, Coach?
Absolutely. Let's be clear. Paige was supposed to be, and she was prior.
Oh, we just lose him? I think I know what Caitlin, Coach.
She, you know, she
oh, there you go. There you go. Go ahead.
And she was, no. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. And she was a rising star. She was going to be Paige before Paige. I mean, Caitlin before Caitlin, because she was a acclaimed high school stud, star, five star. Goes to Connecticut. They win titles every other year. So that's, you know, so she was supposed to be there. And then she got injured again. I mean, oh my gosh, the injury that she suffered. And then, you know, Caitlin came and did her thing. I'm not knocking Caitlin. So Paige would have been out there. Matter of fact, I don't think Caitlin would be the biggest star she is now, because Paige would have stolen a lot of that thunder. You know what I'm saying? She would have been in the NBA earlier. I think I'm forgetting.
Oh, no, I'm gonna put a stat on that. I know we're gonna switch it up. Yep. Because I'm really excited. Yeah, I gotta put a stat on that.
Go.
Paige Becker shot 46% from 3-point land during her freshman year. Yes, it's absurd. It's like it's insane. 46%. Then she had the ACL injury.
Right.
We're talking about a prodigy. People were calling her out like the fifth grade. And like they're retweeting it. They're like, she's going to be Diana Taurasi. And they were putting these posts in the sixth grade. This is who she was. But she wasn't taking too many logo threes. If you did that, Gino put you on the bench. He didn't care. Right. 100% of them. You could sit right next to me on the bench if you're going to shoot it from out there.
Right. So have a seat. Have
I just got to put a stat on that.
Right. Excellent.
And definitely don't forget she was on the cover of my old employer, Slam Magazine, when she was still in high school.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
Only the second woman to ever be on the cover of Slam after the great Shamika Holdsclaw.
I was going to say Holdsclaw.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, I should have asked you to guess.
Yeah.
All right, Coach, before we go, I'm going to get, how about this for a trivia question? Paige is on the cover of Slam in her high school uniform, and it says, Paige Becker's the most electrifying high school player in the world. It's actually an incredible cover. What uniform was Shamika Holdsclaw wearing on the cover of Slam?
Tennessee.
No.
I have no other guess.
It was the New York Knicks. Because they're giving her props as being like wearing the Knicks uniform because of she went to Christ the King and all that.
Right,
so
right,
a little fun trivia question there. Sorry, I guess that wasn't as fun as I thought.
See how you do me, Chuck? You see, when I knew the answer, you know what I mean? He skips me, then he gives me a tough one. You know, me and this cat don't get along too well. You know what I'm saying?
Come on, no,
I get it.
I just
gotta watch out for DZ.
But I digress. Let's go to break right now. I mean, I'm really hoping we'll have Yadia on when we come back from the break. We're speaking to him because there is a rally that he is speaking at this evening at 6 p.m. at 14th and U Street, where a lot of folks are expected. And I think I'm just putting that out there to folks. I'm not y'all do what you're going to do at 6 p.m. this evening. I'm just telling you there's going to be something big at 14th and U that's going to raise issues that I know are important to tons of folks in this town right now. But let's go to break real quick. This is The Collision, WPFW, trying to change the world one broadcast at a time.
Another summer. Sound of the funky drummer. Music hitting your heart, cause I know you got a soul. Listen if you're missing, y'all. Swinging while I'm singing. Giving what you're getting. Know what I'm knowing. While the black band's sweating. In the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. in my step. We got to fight the power. That beat. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
That was, of course, wow, that's interesting. That was Public Enemy, of course, Fight the Power, famously also from the movie Do the Right Thing. I just saw the recent spike in Denzel film Highest to Lowest last night. Highly recommended. Do we have our guest on the line?
We do. I think he's in the room. Scotty is in the room.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm so excited to have this guest with us, man. It's an honor of the show. This is a very known person here in the D.C. area. Chuck, why don't you introduce our guest? Oh, we got a little echo on the other end. But why don't we, Chuck, why don't you introduce who our guest is going to be and why we're speaking to him right now?
Oh, Yachty is an institution in Washington, D.C., most known to be the founder of Long Live Go-Go. If you've seen those Go-Go trucks around, then you know about him. He's been a musician, and he's been involved in the community. Not just a Go-Go musician. I know during the George Floyd uprising, we would see him on the Go-Go truck. Yes, there was a time for Black Joy, and that did not stop sending messages about what we need to do about police terror. I would also say I think I might have first met him because there was an Amplified Noise Act in 2018 that they were trying to pass. Regentrification is really what we're talking about. And people were complaining about Go-Go, which is part of the rich history of Washington, D.C. And Yadio was very much a part of that and helping to push that back as well. I mean, I could go on and on and on. He's here. We have an event tonight at 6 p.m. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it. I will be there myself. So listen, Yadia, it's just incredible to have you on the show. We should have had you on earlier.
I appreciate you all for having me. Thank you for that intro. And all in all, like I tell people, I'm more in the business of people, not politics. And I think that's what causes us to cross paths each time. And just you continuing to do your due diligence with reporting on the news that's going on in the grassroots. And, you know, we appreciate you as well because, you know, media amplification is a huge component of us connecting with people.
Mm. Yadi, so glad to have you on the show. Dave Zirin here. Speaking of grassroots, we're speaking about this rally tonight at 6 p.m. We all know why it's happening, 14th and U Street. What are you seeing? What are you hearing on a grassroots tip about what is happening in Washington, D.C. right now?
I mean, I feel like it's not really, you know, necessary for me to, you know, reiterate what everyone knows and has been feeling. And if there's anyone here that is not in D.C., I mean, I have witnessed, you know, some of the same things you probably heard everyone else witnessing. Just I think it's invasive in a way just to have all these troops here on the ground, and it just doesn't look good at all. Regardless of that, though, that's not really the message that I want to instill in the people tonight or be a part of instilling in the people tonight. I want people to more so look inside themselves and look for solutions on how we can uplift the community and not really be dependent on any system to save us. You know, no one is coming to save us. And I'm always pride myself on being a catalyst for creating spaces that our youth can identify with, you know, that the culture can identify with, and we always can bring the artistic activism to the forefront, because I think that's super, super important. You know, we're never going to be able to combat any of these things with weaponry or any of those type of, you know, violent things, because, you know, we don't have the firepower really, but what we do have is the power of the people and the power of building community and changing the mindset. You know, I want to plant the seed that can help to change the way the community thinks and, you know, start to shift the paradigm so we're more self-reliant, really.
Beautiful, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Chuck, your call,
yeah,
man.
I think I love those two words, artistic activism. Could you elaborate why that is so important?
I mean, I'm an artist myself. You know, a lot of people look at me for the work I've done in the community. And I think sometimes the fact that it is done artistically is overlooked. at the same time, you know, art is, I feel, our only weapon against oppression right now. I mean, and not saying that the art is going to change our plight, though, you know, art definitely can do that if you're an artist. I'm just saying, as far as getting out, having our voice heard, getting our message across, touching people, even we talk about economic impact, you know, this, I've always advocated for, you know, further industrialization of the cultural arts here, you know, specifically go-go. And, you know, even now with this whole campaign that we are activating, which is something for the people, if people have been seeing that SFTP, you know, there's many artistic components that are outside of the protest space that will speak to the movement, you know, art exhibition, a documentary, all these things. You know, we have been heavily involved with the community and community activism for the last 6 or 7 years. So it's important for people to understand where we come from and understand our history, especially now that a lot of those things are being wiped out as well. And it's important for people to join us as well. And having, like I say, once again, us change the position, change our plight, really, you know, it's super important for us to change our plight. And at the end of the day, like I always say, if you look at any even political movement, anyone that's, you know, running for even president, they always have to tap in with the arts community. There's no eluding it. So it's very important to empower the artists with the proper education and information so that they can actually start to develop their own voice within the community, and then not just be artists, you know, not just be them making art, but they have a message that's more substantive, you know?
Well, why is it important for folks to come out tonight? Like, in the context of everything that's happening in DC, like these showings of visible dissent, numbers of people coming together on a place like 14th and U Street, why is it important for people listening to us right now to take the time and come out this evening?
Well, people have to understand that we will not get anywhere living in fear. That's the first thing. And I think that is that's kind of the energy that I've been sensing. You know, I cannot speak for everyone as a whole. The energy I've been sensing is a lot of people are nervous. A lot of people are scared. And I'm the type of person that like to find solutions and fix problems at the root, and then also look down the line to, all right, where does this lead us? So, like I say, people have to understand that this is still our community. People have to understand that, you know, if they are speaking about how violent we are, then let's show them peace. You know, let's be all of the things that they are saying we're not. And we have to be the change that we want to see. We have to lead from the front. And my community is the number one community targeted by these things that are going on. So we have to have our presence felt. We have to utilize the energy that is being bestowed upon us now for good and turn it into a negative into a positive. And I think that we have to do this in the heat of the moment, regardless of, you know, how anyone, you know, feels adverse to what we're doing or what we're doing. If they're adverse to what we're doing, they don't have to join in. At the same time, people don't always see the vision, you know, initially, or they don't always see the vision at the same time. Someone may see it a month from now, a week from now. My whole thing is, it's not about these 30 or 45 days. It's about where we go from here. Not only how do we get through this, where do we go from here, though? So that's why I'm not hyper-focused on just screaming for, you know, you get out of our city, you leave, and da-da-da-da, which, you know, of course, is something that I'm with. Of course, it's something that I stand for. I'm just more concerned with where we go from here. There has been violence in our communities. You know, how do we instill more peace? We have to lean on the community to build the community. And that's why I feel it's so important that we do create this space where people, you know, can feel a sense of brotherhood, sisterhood, safety, a sense of belonging, and all of those things, especially in this time. I think people are confused as to where what they should do, you know. So let's start to provide some direction.
Man, I agree with that so much. Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. Go ahead, DZ. Go.
No, you go with it. Chuck. I'm just saying, I agree with the fact that, like, there's so much fear and confusion in the face of this because it feels new. I mean, we've been over-policed. We've seen that in communities in D.C. for eons. But this obviously has a much, much different vibe. National Guard, live ammunition, DHS, ICE checkpoints, and having spaces where people don't feel afraid is really critical. And also don't feel confused because it's like, oh, I'm upset, but what can I do about it? Sorry, go ahead, Chuck. You said
no, that's actually a good segue from what you're saying because, you know, people come to Yadi from different ways, and I come to him through covering protests. And when he says, not everyone sees the vision, I've seen the vision with my own eyes. You're going to have your hardcore protesters out there. You know, we had Nini on a couple of weeks ago. We know the people in the community who've been here for a while doing it. But I've seen with my own eyes people who didn't have a protest bone in their body come to these places, have an incredible time, learn about this, learn about that, connect with somebody who is in the movement, and they enter that space. They enter that space through love. They enter that space through music. I've seen it with my own eyes, and there's something to be said about that vision. And I think the question I want to ask about that, but also that what always comes up, you have a go-go truck in these terrible times, and Black Joy is framed as resistance. And I want you to elaborate a little bit on that, how Black Joy is part of a resistance movement as well.
Well, I didn't catch everything you said, but I did catch you asking me about Black Joy, and I would assume that you're asking me why that is important right now.
Correct.
In a nutshell. And I would say when you talk about things like love and when you talk about things like unity, talk about things like positivity, talk about things like confidence, these are the things that can transcend any negativity or any situation that we go through. So these spaces that we have been called upon to create have touched all of those pillars. And even when I started Mochella and all of these things, you know, years ago, people would ask me the same questions. You know, life is cyclical, right? So I'm really feeling the moment that I am in, and I feel that I've been here before, right? So it's like I can understand people's fear and nervousness. At the same time, we have to have a sense of joy, right? We got to have a sense of community. We got to evoke that spirit. Evoke that spirit out of people. You know what I mean? Like, joy is such an essential part to just keeping your frequency high and staying positive. You know, it's something that we all should have. It's colorless.
I think of what you're saying, young man, and I moved to it. This is a coach. I'm DC Cat all the way around. And you're speaking of joy. It's ironic. Let me watch this. You had the Chuck Brown joy session down at across at Fort DuPont Park. I was raised across the street from Fort DuPont Park, and I remember, this is why I get so worked up about what's going on here, like you said earlier about the troops going through our city. I remember in 1969, 68, when the riot happened, troops going down my street in Jeeps, who with their rifle at the ready, not at ease. So, but anyway, I want to ask you a question. Where did you establish, and it's radiating with me, your ethnic value and racial pride? I'm very big on that. And I can see it coming out in your conversation. Where did you establish your ethnic value and racial pride to want to go out and do your own this evening?
Where did I establish it?
Yes. Like, from being a young man?
Nah, bro, I follow God, bro. It's from God, bro. Like,
I hear you.
I honestly let a protest for 185 nights before I even started Mochella, you know, in front of the White House. These are not things that I plan to do. You know, my life is truly a testament, bro. Like, I could have never planned any of these things that have happened to me. I've truly been utilized as a vessel. You know, I've truly been going with the flow, and it has led me here. So these are questions I ask myself. Why am I always called to, you know, in these scenarios, why am I always the person that's one of the people that's at the forefront, you know? So I wouldn't say it's just who I am. You know, I've always been a person who cares about others. You know, my mom always tells me this about myself, you know, ever since I was a young kid, kindergarten, first grade, I want to take school supplies for the kids that need them. You know what I mean? I just always feel a sense of, I am extremely blessed so that I can bless others. So, beautiful. Like I say, who knows why? I don't know the why exactly. I just know how I feel in my spirit, you know, and I feel moved to do something. I'm the type of person, I just do it. I don't always have to have the know why, you know. Sometimes we know why later on, you know. It's just truly intuitive.
Well said, my brother. Well said.
No, absolutely. And let's bring it to Go-Go, if we could. What makes it such a powerful cultural connection here in D.C.? You don't see it in other cities. It's so much a D.C. thing. And why do you think Go-Go is so important to the idea of resistance?
I'm sorry. Give me one second. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good. As you're getting that together, I'll remind people, 14th and U Street at 8 p.m. It's 6 p.m. 14th and U Street.
I'm sorry. What was the last question you had? We moved it up to 5 p.m. because there is a curfew tonight for juvenile. It's not a curfew at 8, but they have named where we're doing this activation, a curfew zone.
Yes.
So if you're 17 and under, you have to be on 16th somewhere. I have the diagram on Instagram. So just check out for the youth, any youth or any adults that are tuned in and they know any youth planning to come in 17 and under. I don't expect many 17 and under people, but if they are coming, please let them know that 14th and U will be a curfew zone at 8 o'clock. Right. So we moved it from 5 to 7:30.
Yeah. That's ironic that that's happening.
You mean from 7:30 to 5? I'm sorry. You mean from 7:30 to 5? Am I right?
7:30.
Okay. Okay.
Right, 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Isn't that right?
I see what you're saying. Okay. I got it. Perfect. And appreciate that too.
Yeah. But it's ironic.
I would say this.
Go ahead.
It's not ironic. We know how these people operate. That's another thing. We can't be oblivious, you know?
Yep.
And we have to be direct, right?
Right.
At the same time, if you say you support the city and you care about the community, there's no reason why you shouldn't be here.
Right.
A lot of people are talking about nervousness and safety and all these things, but then they go outside and scream, "We keep us safe." They have to understand what a lot of these terms, these statements, and these sayings mean truly when they're utilizing them. These are not just buzzwords. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
If you really care about safety, about our public safety and where our community is heading, and when these spaces are created, you should show up. If not, just don't say anything. If you don't feel safe to come outside, stay inside. But don't dictate to what the people that want to activate are doing. At the end of the day, this is all a part of justice. And if you want to use a buzz statement, dissent is patriotic. So people have to understand these things when we come to these scenarios. And you aren't supposed to feel completely confident that you don't, you know, someone told me, you know, it's risky. You know, it's risky. If I go drive my car right now, it's risky.
Correct.
So I don't want to hear about risk. You understand? People have to understand that the more you allow, and not even saying that going and protesting and yelling and chanting and all these things are going to make the change today. No, but it will plant the seed that will create the change. And we have to be hyper community right now. That is the whole message, meaning community building, community investment, all these things. And we have to stop leaning on the system, the same system that oppresses us.
Amen. We're just about out of time. I think we have to really get the word out. Chuck, Coach, all of us. It's 5 p.m. and not 6 p.m. tonight.
That's right.
So got to make sure folks know that, because what's going out. So everybody out there, 5 p.m., 14th and U Street, if that's the sort of thing that you want to go to and show folks that you are part of the community and that we keep us safe, as Yadier said so well, in practice, not just as a slogan. 5 p.m., 14th and U Street, today, here in Washington, D.C. Yadier, man, thank you so much for being with us here on The Collision.
Yeah, thank you, Yadier.
Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Well, that's all the time we have this week. Chuck, Coach, any last words from either of y'all?
I heard it was a second curfew from 5 to 7 in that area.
It's not by coincidence that this is happening, because we already have a curfew for the young people. So, you know, I mean,
it's just not a coincidence at all.
Yeah, but, exactly. Yeah.
But what I love is that Yachty changed the time. In the improvisational style that Go-Go is, changed the time to meet the community needs in response to that fascist curfew.
Right.
But we now have a responsibility to get the word out there.
Absolutely.
A lot of what's been out there has been changed because of these people. And I mean the fascist horde, Stephen Miller and the rest of it. They are dictating, but we are responding. That's the point I'm trying to make. Coach, any last thoughts from you?
I'm good, baby. I love you guys, boy.
Love you guys, too. Tough times. Yeah. That's when we really come together. You find out who you people are.
One quick question, Dave. What is your nickname? Okay, what's your nickname, baby?
Nickname's DC Dave Z. Yo, for everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here.
DC Dave Z.
Are you ready to move, groove, and exercise with the WPFW family? WPFW's annual 5K Run Walk for Total Fitness happens Saturday, September 13th from 8 a.m. till 1 p.m. This fundraiser will be held at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, 4601 Annapolis Road in Bladensburg, Maryland. In addition to a scenic 5K trail, fitness and wellness classes will be offered. Lively music to fuel your participation in the activities, along with water and healthy snacks, will be provided. Details are at WPFWFM.org or call 202-888-5484. There's something for everyone to enjoy. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Jackie Lukeman, chairperson of the Black Alliance for Peace Coordinating Committee, with an editorial. Donald Trump imposed federal control of the Metropolitan Police Department and deployed the National Guard in Washington, D.C. under the pretext of public safety. This follows his March 2025 executive order establishing the Safe and Beautiful Task Force aimed at addressing crime in D.C. and after the Secure D.C. Omnibus Bill was passed, the latest in Democrat crime laws that have devastated marginalized communities, particularly Black, African, working class, and youth. Now Trump goes further and invokes law and order to justify military occupation. Militarized domestic occupation that advances as the U.S. and the West deepen their support for the Zionist genocide in Gaza, while they normalize repression of the global masses struggling against and resisting them. We must confront the colonial capitalist structures and oppressive class rule that made all of this possible. We must fight Trump's authoritarianism, but we must also fight Democrat tough-on-crime criminalization of poverty and dissent. And we must fight for a future where safety is not imposed by militarization, but built through structures of popular democracy, peace, social justice, and collective liberation. The Black Alliance for Peace says, end the colonial occupation of Washington, D.C. No justice, no peace, no compromise, no retreat. The full statement can be found at blackallianceforpeace.com/BAP statements. This has been Jackie Lukeman, chairperson of the Black Alliance for Peace Coordinating Committee, with an editorial.
It is with a heavy heart that the WPFW family marks the passing of Nkinji Touré. Born Anita Stroud on March 5, 1951, in Baltimore, Maryland. Nkinji was an activist whose expansive collection of speeches and written works confront issues around reproductive justice, Black feminism, and women's rights. She was a vocal proponent of the anti-rape movement and continuously advocated for gender equality within the Black Nationalist Movement and the Black Panther Party. Later in life, Touré took on roles to improve quality of life for those struggling with both substance abuse and HIV/AIDS. In addition, Nkinji was a longtime WPFW producer and host of In Our Voices, and a member of the women's radio collective, Sophie's Parlor. She was instrumental in ensuring that International Women's Day programming was celebrated annually on WPFW. Homegoing services for Nkinji Touré are scheduled for 2.